Committee on Healthcare and Veterans Affairs. It's still April 16th. And hopefully we'll get out by April 6th, but before April 17th.
How about 8 o'clock tonight?
Yeah, that's my goal. All right. With that, I would like to open a work session on 679. Let's get that one out of the way. And basically that authorizes insurers to pay dividends in form of cash rewards to enrollees who participate in approved programs to promote healthy lifestyle. DCBS, please come forward. 679.
Do you want me to just talk?
Yeah.
No, just sit here and smile.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Miller, and I'm the Acting Administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And first of all, I would just like to thank Senator Morse, and I think Senator Bates was also signed on to this bill, and I just wanted to thank them for bringing this legislation forward. Encouraging wellness is a very important part of the larger healthcare reform discussion, and we were very pleased to see this legislation. Senator Morse was kind enough to allow the department to review the original language of this bill and offer our comments. And as we reviewed the bill, we considered the federal HIPAA law and the potential impact of the law on the bill. HIPAA addresses the use of financial incentives for wellness-related programs and makes a distinction based on whether rewards, in the case of this bill, the cash dividends, are available to all regardless of health or health outcomes, or whether the payments would be outcome-based, so based on weight loss or cholesterol levels or something like that. As originally drafted, the bill avoided HIPAA concerns because the cash dividends appeared to be available to all regardless of health or health outcomes. However, when the Dash 1 amendment became available and we reviewed it, it appeared that the amendment took a slightly different approach, which did raise some HIPAA concerns. Some of the language in the amendment dealt with things like controlling weight or maintaining fitness, things that arguably would be based on outcome as opposed to participation in a program. So we had sent a letter to the committee yesterday and then followed up with conversations with Senator Morse this morning, worked with his staff, and I think came up with language that you now have as the Dash 2 amendment that addresses those concerns that we had. And I believe this new language would satisfy HIPAA and would no longer have the concerns that we had articulated in the letter. So I really appreciate the senator's willingness to work with us on that, and we would support the bill with the Dash 2 amendments.
Excellent. We're in work session.
Oh, we are? Good, I'm back.
It's your bill. Do you want to? Either one of you can make a motion.
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes, I'm ready for a motion.
Sure. I would be delighted to do so.
Okay.
I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 679.
Senator Morse moves the Dash 2s to Senate Bill 679. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Excused.
Morse?
Aye.
Morse?
Aye.
Cruz?
Excuse.
Monette Anderson?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Morse, would you?
I'm sure I move.
Yes, but before we do that, the fiscal?
Right. With the late amendments, Madam Chair, it's a Dash 2, and fiscal has provided a Dash 1. The fiscals will not change at all. However, we, in order to drop the bill, we're going to need a fiscal for the Dash 2. So I might suggest that we just hold the vote till Tuesday morning when we'll have the Dash 2s fiscal.
Okay. Too bad that we just can't do that. All right. With that, we'll close the work session on 679. And we will open a work session on 734. Do we have the fiscal?
734. Madam Chair, yes, that was carried over from this morning, which we did not have the fiscal, and late this afternoon we did get them. So 734 has the fiscal revenue, and we're all complete on that. And there are no amendments.
All right. And I don't see the fiscal. I know you said we have one.
It should be right here, Jeff.
Oh, did it just come? Oh, this
is it.
Okay, great. All right.
17
I missed. I missed one vote.
Okay.
And we are on 734. And we are in work session, and there's no impact. And I am looking for a motion.
I'm looking for the bill.
No, that shouldn't stop you from making a motion.
It stops me.
It's the one you're going to vote no on. You told me you were. So, Senator Morissette?
We don't have an amendment, right?
No amendment.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 734 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves Senate Bill 734 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Colleagues, this is a mandate to cover tobacco smoking cessation program issues. And
there's no opposition.
There's no opposition.
It's my bill.
Okay. There's no discussion. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Excuse.
Morissette?
Aye.
Morse?
Aye.
Crude?
Since I told you I'd vote no, I'll vote no.
Oh, jeez.
Okay.
Winnis Anderson? Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Morissette, will you carry the bill?
I would absolutely love to carry it.
Okay. So that.
Thank you, Senator Morris.
734.
I recognize, Madam Chair, the distribution of the committee tonight.
And if we do not have enough to carry a bill, I'm going to give the Senate President a call.
He's already mad enough at me.
All right. With that, did I close the work session?
Work session.
On 734, mm-hmm. And then I'll open a work session on 556.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have we done this one? This one?
Which bill did we do, Bill?
And do you want to remind us what that bill is?
Madam Chair, 556 is carried over two or three times. We actually heard this a number of weeks ago. It requires certain places of public assembly to have automated external defibrillators. And the owner of the public assembly requires that staff, person trained in use of the defibrillator is present when the place is open for business. There have been, I believe, four amendments. The Dash 4 amendment was approved at our last meeting. We then requested a fiscal and revenue, of which we now have in your packet.
Great. And the Dash 4s are the ones, so we're in work session.
Madam Chair. Amendment of Senate Bill 556 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Cruz moves 556. I mean, the Dash 4.
No, we don't. No,
we
did.
Oh, we dealt it. So 556.
As amended.
Moves Senate Bill 556 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And the fiscal, I just want to make sure before.
Should have been in your packet of this morning.
I just want to check it that it, we still can make it go to the floor. Yes. Okay. With that, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Excuse.
Morrison. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Haas will carry this bill.
Okay, good.
And with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 556. And what about this one?
Well, that's public hearing.
Yeah. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 521. Oh, we are closing a work session on 521, and this bill probably won't come back. And with that, we will go to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 850.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 850 will be the first time we've heard this bill. And I... Senate Bill 850 would add a dentist, licensed dentist, as a member of the Oregon Health Services Commission. In front of you, you also have an amendment, so it's a dash one.
Ed Senator Morsett, do you want to talk?
I have authoritative people in the audience who will testify.
Okay. I need the witness registration form, please. Excellent. Let's have Deborah Loy come up first.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead. Introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Deborah Loy, and I represent Capital Dental Care. But I also, and Capital Dental Care is a dental care organization with the Oregon Health Plan. However, I also represent a larger group, the Oregon Oral Health Advocates, which includes all of the dental care organizations participating with the Oregon Health Plan. It also includes the Oregon Dental Association and the Oregon Hygiene Association. And I thank you for this opportunity to testify on this bill, which would add a dentist to the Health Services Commission. The Health Services Commission is the commission that does the prioritized list work, which is used for the coverage package for the Oregon Health Plan. And in their duties and responsibilities for doing that, they analyze clinical information and cost information and evidence-based information to determine which services are included in the Oregon Health Plan coverage package and where they would rank in the list. From the beginning of the Oregon Health Plan, the oral health services have been integrated throughout that list. However, there wasn't an inclusion of an oral health professional on the commission listing, which indicates which practitioners and which representative people will be on the commission, which includes mental health, it includes advocacy, it includes physician and medicine. So this would add an oral health professional to the commission to do the work they do. Over the years since the Oregon Health Plan and the Commission first started, and that statute that indicates who's on the Commission was put into play, the importance of overall health and oral health connection has grown. In fact, an Aetna study, which was done in 2003 and recently released findings on, showed a very, very strong correlation, not only to health outcomes of members that they both included for oral health in medical health medical benefits, but it also showed significant per member per month savings to what they paid on the medical side. And in fact, for coronary artery disease, those members who received periodontal services, they found they had a cost savings per member per month of 16%. For cerebral vascular disease, and I apologize if I didn't pronounce it correctly, it was 11%. And for diabetes, it was 9% per member per month cost, which are significant cost savings for chronic diseases that oftentimes draw down quite extensive medical cost funding. Also, conversations have grown in chronic disease management and an integrated home, and it makes sense to have an oral health partner in those. So obviously, as the commission looks at benefit structure, it's important to have a dentist at the table helping to determine the policy decisions and the ranking of those services that make sense in reaching prevention goals and chronic disease management goals. Oral health services for children are actually mandatory by the federal government under the Medicaid program, including in the early periodic screening and diagnostic testing program. Oral health services are also in those for children. The prevention model of the Oregon Health Plan plays well with basically an oral health component because it's basically built on prevention and hopefully avoiding the disease to begin with. So the other thing is the commission does a lot of work based upon evidence-based studies, and the thing about oral health or dentistry, oftentimes evidence-based studies are funded by pharmaceutical or other organizations that come up with large amounts of money to fund those studies. Because oral health doesn't have as much of that evidence-based information because of that funding problem, it really is very important to make sure that there's an oral health professional who can help weigh information and provide standard of care feedback to the commission and their work. From the beginning, oral health services have been important to the members covered of the under the Oregon Health Plan and also have been integrated throughout the list since the inception. And I ask for your consideration in this bill in adding an oral health professional.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Morissette?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6. One of the reasons I'm interested in this bill in this area is that I, at an NSL or NCSL conference not too long ago, well, a couple of years ago, I attended a session that was devoted entirely to oral health, and I was kind of amazed at the importance of oral health to all other areas of health in terms of what goes into your mouth and the condition of your mouth, your gums, your teeth, and so on. And one of the tragedies I think of people who are homeless and people who don't have an opportunity to get the kind of dental care that they that we all really need at an early age, you know, there's a lot of suffering and people get abscess, mouths, teeth, die. It's a very, very important field, and I think in terms of overall preventative health, I think it's essential to have someone representing this particular discipline on that board, that group. So I think it's important.
All righty.
Thank you.
Questions? All right, Stephen Cafori.
Madam Chair, may I turn my cell phone off so I won't be embarrassed? Thank you. My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here representing the Oregon Association of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. I have an amendment I'd like to add to the bill that you have the dash ones in front of you, which add a complimentary health care practitioner to the board. I'm sorry. Would be neither an acupuncturist and an naturopath or a chiropractor. I did not add an acupuncturist because I thought if I do that, then somebody will come in next time and add a chiropractor and somebody else next time, and you'll have a long, long, long list. So I thought one position, and the people who do the selecting can choose who that ought to be. But to present that viewpoint. Just briefly, the history of acupuncture in the Medicare started in 1988 when acupuncture was first used for addiction treatment. In the 1990s, there was a committee set up, evidence-based committee, look at adding acupuncture, and they added 52 line items. Then early in this decade, the E-Board, during one of the budget slashing sessions in the middle of the interim, had to cut some money out of the Oregon Health Plan, and they just cut a bunch of acupuncture out without any looking at analysis or testimony or anything, just did it because they had to get money out in a hurry. All but four items were cut. Right now we have acupuncture and Oregon Health Plan for substance abuse, HIV/AIDS, comfort care, and smoking cessation. You'll notice that I used the word complementary, not alternative. There's been a real move lately to bring what used to be called alternative modalities into mainstream medical practice. In fact, just today I was looked at the, my acupuncturist website, and they have a quote from a physical therapy, big physical therapy clinic that said they look forward to sending their patients there for specific purposes. And I know that OHSU is doing a lot of complementary stuff with acupuncture and Western medicine. The advantages, obviously, are that it's cheaper, it's non-invasive, it doesn't use pharmaceuticals with all the potential side effects. We think that a person with the perspective that being a complementary medicine practitioner brings would aid in making the decisions that this group's going to have to make. So I'd ask for that. It was mentioned, somebody said there might be a possibility of fiscal on this, adding another person to send it to Ways and Means. I can't see where this would add more than a couple hundred dollars a biennium, and I don't think that a couple hundred dollars a biennium is going to send anything to Ways and Means.
Oh, yes, it will.
Yeah.
All righty. How many practitioners, acupuncturists, naturopaths, and chiropractic physicians are there, do you think, in the state of Oregon? You don't know that?
No, I don't know. I have no idea how many chiropractors. I have no idea how many naturopaths. I knew that the state of Oregon has a very, very large number of complementary medicine practitioners because we've been one of the first states to license these, and we have a couple of schools. I also know that there's been a lot of overlapping now. Many, many naturopaths are taking acupuncture, and so they come out with the ability to do both. There are maybe 800 acupuncturists in the state of Oregon presently.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I heard I asked that question about naturopaths, and I was told 600, around 600.
Naturopaths.
Yeah, naturopaths.
The number of chiropractors dropped dramatically in the state when the workers' comp reform happened about a decade ago, and I'm guessing there would be roughly the same number.
All right. Thank you very much. And I'd like Dr. Smith to come forward. She is a participant of the staff to the Oregon Health Services Commission, and I'd like her to describe the makeup, if you have it on the top of your head.
Chair Monish Anderson, members of the committee, I'm Janine Smith, the administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research, where the Health Services Commission lives. The director could not stay this evening because of child care obligations, sends his regrets. The commission has, at this a juncture, it's laid out in front of you, here in some of the, We have five members that must be physicians who have clinical expertise in general areas of obstetrics, perinatal health, pediatrics, adult medicine, mental health, chemical dependency, disabilities, geriatrics, or public health. And at least one of those must be a doctor of osteopathic. We have a public health nurse, a social services worker, and four members must be consumers, and that they would, and then that what this would do is add the dentist. So the main, by adding the dentist, it does make it be an even number as opposed to an uneven number, but we can settle that with the chair breaking any ties. We've never had that many ties, so it shouldn't be an issue.
Well, if we added the amendment, that would make
back
how many?
To the odd number again. And I think that
right now it's how many?
I think it is. I think it's 11.
11, yes, it's
and,
11.
And then we'd add. That would make it 12 to add the dentist, and then if you added one complement represented representative of the complementary medicine, then we'd be back at 13. I think the only hesitation the director had is if we keep adding too many, it gets to be a non-functional group, and they have thousands and thousands of codes to go through. We've worked very closely with the dental community over the years to try to get their expertise, but I think that adding the dentist certainly formalizes that relationship, and the commission feels, you know, would feel very comfortable with that. The complementary medicine at the moment, because of the cuts in the past, there's not as many lines, and there's certainly not as many codes. I mean, there's hundreds of dental codes, and there's a handful at this point on the list for acupuncture, chiropractic, and I don't believe at this time massage therapy is even covered.
Naturopath,
right. Because I actually haven't seen the dash ones or the amendment in person, but I was told about it a few minutes ago. Yes. So I think if we could have one that would represent the complementary medicine, we did that on the Benefits Committee of the Health Fund Board. We did have a complementary medicine representative when we discussed the essential benefit package. As far as fiscal, the members of the commission we reimburse expenses if we need to. For instance, in order to get the geographic representation, we have had to fly an obstetrician in from Southern Oregon. So I think, again, if it's one or two more, probably it would be pretty minimal in a fiscal, if at all. It's just those are the only real we'd still have the same other costs are all the same, pretty much. But I think if you added four plus one or something like that, then we start to get into where it could get more expensive.
All right. Yes, Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I'd draw our attention to the language
in the amendment.
On the dash one amendments. Mm-hmm. My plain reading is that one member must be an acupuncturist, comma, a naturopathic physician, or a chiropractic physician. My plain reading of that is that it adds two by virtue of the construct of that sentence.
And the intent of the bill was to add one of the three, correct?
May I respond to that?
Please come forward.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, you've just hit upon one of my pet peeves. I've been around here since 1973, and ever since that time, Legislative Council insists on the comma use, which I think makes things ambiguous. In the past, there was a lawyer from Portland who used to come down here every session to introduce a bill to make them put commas, and that's the way they write the bills. They don't put as many commas as are necessary. And that's Legislative Council style. There's nothing we can do about it. And I agree with you, it makes it ambiguous often, and it shouldn't be that way, but that's the way Legislative Council writes three in a series.
But the intent of this, and we could have this clarified, is to add one member who is either an acupuncturist, naturopath, or a chiropractor.
Exactly.
That would be clear, but my layman reading of that is you're adding two.
Perhaps we'll get Senator Morse to introduce a bill this session, too.
All righty.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 850. And let's see, where's my list here? 850. Oh, there we go. And we did this one. All right, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 453. And let's call Dr. Smith and Sean, is it Sean and Tina, Carol, whoever, to talk about the amendments that we want to address.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, I'm Tina Edlund. I'm the Deputy Administrator with the Office of Health Policy and Research. I will actually hand it over to Sean Comer, our research manager, to talk about the amendment, since he really was the person who organized the work groups and worked with the stakeholder groups to get us to this point. So, go ahead.
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Comer, Research Manager, Office of Health Policy and Research. Before you are three sets of amendments, and I'll give you the high points of each one, and feel free to stop me if you have any additional questions.
There, one.
There's a dash one, there's a dash two, and there's a dash three. So the dash one, what it does, two things. The first thing that it does is it formally adds recommendations from the Health Equities Committee of the Oregon Health Fund Board that makes it much more clear about what we're going to be using this data for, an All Payer, All Claims database, to address race, ethnicity, and language disparities. The second thing that it does is it adds some additional privacy language to make sure that we're protecting the information appropriately that we're receiving. So those are the two major changes in the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 2 amendments, the first thing that it does is it maintains the sunset of the Oregon Health Fund Board to January 1st of 2010. And then the second
thing...
Say
that again.
It keeps the sunset, so it removes the non-sunset in the original in 453, if that makes sense.
The continuation.
It removes the sunset, so the board continues.
No,
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, the original bill as filed, Senate Bill 453, actually continued, removed the sunset on the health fund board. But given that that there are other vehicles, namely the health authority, with the First Amendment, we actually removed that language and allowed the board to sunset in January of 2010 as originally written.
All right. We are having problems finding the dash threes. I have the dash ones. I have the dash twos.
That explains why I couldn't find them either.
I don't have a copy.
It should have been in your packet of this morning. That may have been one of the problems. Do you have copies, or can we make copies?
One of us stuck them in the wrong place.
So before you go on, Sean, let's make sure we have everything.
Yeah.
I don't have dash threes.
Yeah, all of us don't have the dash threes, so that's...
That would make me think that it wasn't my fault.
Yeah. Chair Mona Sanderson, I had a copy of the dash threes.
Excellent.
So I think
That's why we were so fumbling with the papers here. Well, we all have the dash twos, but is there... So the first one has to do with the health disparities, the privacy issue.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, and that's clear cut. Then the dash twos...
So it sunsets the Oregon Health Fund Board is the first thing that it does. The second thing that it does is it allows the Office of Health Policy and Research to continue to have some committees working on medical malpractice, payment reform, and the health insurance exchange. So some of the things that were originally in 453 that the Health Fund Board was supposed to be doing, it allows our office to do that work instead.
But it's not establishing anything. It just says that it will work.
It will form committees as necessary.
Correct. Okay.
The third thing that it does, and we talked about this the last time that we were up in front of you, is it aligns the All Payer, All Claims database along national standards and existing standards of claims processing. And that work was done through the stakeholder work that we did. The next thing is establishes enrollment thresholds. So in conversations with stakeholders and third-party administrators, that we would, in the rule process, look at when we're dealing with small TPAs that might have only 30 or 40 members in them, is that really worth the burden to put on them for 30 or 40 people? So to have those kinds of discussions in the rulemaking process. So making it very explicit in statute that we would do that and address that in the rule process. The next thing would be making sure that we're adding unlicensed TPAs along with the licensed TPAs, so making sure that we're getting the data from the entire TPA market. And the last thing that the Dash 2 amendments do is it adds a rulemaking timeline of December 31st of this year, and then has an implementation date of July 1st of 2010. So clear timelines and clear goals for our office to meet in the rulemaking process and in the implementation process. The mysterious dash three amendments is really a technical fix of the dash two amendments. There was a drafting error where a section that wasn't referenced for OHPR to assess fines for noncompliance. That was added into the dash threes, but it's identical to the dash twos other than that.
There is no page three.
And those are the amendments before you. And I believe you should have fiscals for all three.
There is a three. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
And you said we have the fiscals for all three?
Yes, we do, Madam Chair.
Yes. Thank you. So we have dash 3, dash 1, dash 2. Talking about a lot of money here. Is it all going to be general fund?
Chairman Sanderson, a large portion of it is federal fund, but because the work is includes looking at Medicaid dollars, Medicaid clients that we can actually match with federal funds. So $1.9 million in general fund and $3.7 total, excuse me. So the remainder, that difference between the $1.9 and $3.7 is federal fund.
All right. Any questions? We're in work session.
We just got an amendment. You want to move it now?
Well, we've had the ones and the twos. It's the and with the threes. Just show us how it's different. Tell us where to go on, because I see that page one is exactly the same as the dash twos. I see that page two.
So, Madam Chair, if you look at page 2, line 19, there's the fix that was made between the dash 2s and the dash 3s. So it's a section reference that got changed.
Yeah, in line, okay.
Yeah.
It should have been line 9 instead of 19, and delete 8 instead of 10, and insert 3 instead of 5. So that's the difference. That's why I don't have a problem with the dash 3s. Am I going to have a constitutional problem here?
Well, Madam Chair, my question would be, oh, hold on, I'm reading that wrong.
Dash threes and the dash twos are the exact same fiscal. The numbers are exactly the same, which is. Can you watch that?
We're moving the dash threes, right?
And Senator Morris?
Excuse me?
Are you all right with the amendments?
Yeah, I would make a comment.
Yes, please do.
If I could create a metaphor based on my business experience, I feel like we're bidding a job, but we don't have any money in the bank. And I'm not sure how you can build a job without working capital. So I'll vote to move it down to Ways and Means. But this is a tough one.
And I do feel it is good policy, very good policy actually, and you're right. That's a question that's going to have to happen in Ways and Means.
Chair Melissa Anderson, members of the committee, this was originally part of the $5 million in the governor's recommended budget for health reform infrastructure. So this is included in that package.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to mention that the governor did put money in his budget
the legislature obviously can do anything they want with that, but I think that, you know, this is has become a priority. I didn't used to think so, but I do now, and I think we have to move it along, and we have, I think we should send it to Ways and Means and let them make that decision. If we're going to stop everything that we've done on health care reform, that would be that would not be a good way to go. I mean, we've come this far. I think we have some momentum. We're beginning to understand what, you know, the different parts are, and we must continue, I think.
Chair Mona Sanderson, if I may add something too, we have an opportunity as part of the federal stimulus dollars. HRSA has announced some state planning. They actually, it's state planning grants for healthcare reform that is anywhere from $7 to $10 million a year. But the state has to come up with 20% local matching funds, and what we are, it's competitive grants, so we can't be sure that we can bring this down. But we're perfectly positioned for it. We really meet all the requirements of the grant. We are going to basically argue that this package of bills and the health reform efforts that the state is funding in this session is our local match.
Can we recess for a couple minutes?
Okay, we're in recess.
Can I have a conversation?
Committee on Health Care and Veterans Affairs, and we are in work session on Senate Bill 453.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 453.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 453. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the dash.
Oh, wait. Please note Senator Bates
excuse.
As excused.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move the dash three amendment, Senate Bill 453.
You did the ones?
And I'm doing the three. We don't need the twos.
We do need.
No,
we don't
need.
The threes replace
the twos.
Yeah.
Are
we need all
twos three?
Are
in the threes? Are
the twos are in the threes, correct.
I think they are.
Correct.
The
threes are the twos.
You said that the threes were the twos with one correction.
Yeah.
Right, they are.
Yeah.
They are.
I would like you to please come up and as I look at the threes.
It
seemed like they were exactly the same, and then Sean said that on page 2, line 19, that was the only change in the dash threes.
He's right.
And then page 3. It's exactly the same, so it's the ones and the threes.
Mm-hmm.
See, we know what we're doing.
it's pure luck that we do, but.
Okay, so you move.
I move the threes.
Senator Cruz moves the dash threes into Senate Bill 453. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Please note Senator Bates as excused.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 453 as amended to the floor and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 453 as amended with the ones and threes to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
The reason I did not put a recommendation on it is because I think there will be other opportunities in Ways and Means Committee to look at doing the same work in a different structure, and I don't want to prejudice the legislation that still may be coming forward.
Is there any other further discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Excused.
Morrison?
Aye.
Morse?
Aye.
Cruz?
Aye.
Chairwoman
Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you.
And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 453. We're getting there, guys. Now, I will open, get my list here.
454.
Work session on 454. Mr. Shook.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 454 has been heard about a month ago and had subsequent hearings. And we have in front of you in just a second a dash one and a dash two. Refresh your memory. 454 established stated reporting requirements for carriers offering health benefit plans and for third-party administrators.
And 454. So we have in front of us the dash twos. I'd like Carol or Tina or Janine, and then we'll have Tom, but let's get Sean. No, okay. And we won't be moving this today because we don't have the fiscal, everybody, but because we're getting down to the timeline, we really need to be discussing what these amendments are coming forward with. And I know that Senator Morse had some concerns about this bill, and I felt it was important for us to start talking and start hearing the concerns that Senator Morse had conveyed to me, and to get some things on the record. So with that, we will want to have explanations of the dash ones and the dash twos.
Chair Monis Anderson, committee members, for the record, my name is Carol Robinson, interim director of the Oregon Health Fund Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 454. First of all, at the chair's request, we had several meetings and conversations with stakeholders to shape the amendments before you. And what you will see in front of you is the result of a lot of hard work with a number of stakeholder groups. We have had productive conversations, and while we may not have wholesale agreement with all of our proposed amendments, we believe that important middle ground was reached, and the legislation before you will create important steps towards health reform in Oregon. So starting off, if the dash one amendments were adopted, the health reform initiatives in Senate Bill 453 would first of all require all licensed health insurers and third-party administrators to report on their covered lives by line of business and by zip code to the director of DCBS annually. There's a lack of community-level information about the number of commercially covered lives in Oregon. These data will serve as the kind of canary in the coal mine, the early warning system, by providing information about the growth or decline in commercial coverage at the local level. So by understanding these aggregated trends, interested stakeholders can further evaluate their community health care system and design more effective initiatives to improve cost, quality, and access. And since we know all health care is local, we believe that this is a really important feature of the bill. Secondly, the bill would require the development of uniform standards for eligibility verification, health care claims, and payment remittance advice for licensed health insurers in Oregon, and allow the director of DCBS services to adopt these standards by rule. So what that means, in a nutshell, is that administrative expenses account for a significant percentage of total health care spending. So the money that can be saved by creating standard forms and processes will be shared by both the payers and the providers of health care. Last week, I did an informal survey of insurance companies and called several executives of insurance companies around the state. Without exception, they indicated that the majority of the phone calls to their customer service offices and representatives are initiated by medical provider offices relating to eligibility or billing questions. So increasing the use of electronic transmission of forms will yield tremendous savings, and because CMS requirements for electronic transmission of Medicare claims have already paved the way for states to expect improvement in this area. Reform efforts in Minnesota have projected similar savings, and we based some of our estimates on the Minnesota results. So while I was on the phone with insurance executives last week, I did ask them about what percentage of their claims forms are they still receiving in paper form. And without exception, it was 20% or higher. So if you do some just quick math, because there's been a recent national study that shows that a paper health claim, it costs about $1.58, and an electronic claim costs less than half of that. You can save $12 million a year just simply by moving 97-98% of those to all electronic claims. Beyond that, a study in 2006 showed in Minnesota that between $15 and $21 million could be saved annually, but just by reducing the number of follow-up telephone calls between healthcare providers and payers to resolve questions. So there's some significant savings in this system, and what we found was that both payers, the insurers, and the providers, I checked with OMA, and they said, we'd love to see this pass. So this, I think, has very strong support from both sides of the system. The third thing that Senate Bill 455 will do is require public disclosure and engagement by hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers about capital expenditures, including construction and medical technology. And so we divided this in a couple of different formats to address the concerns of both the ASCs and the hospitals. In your testimony, you'll see that over $1 billion in hospital construction projects in Oregon have been completed since 2003. Additionally, advances in medical technology account for more than 50% of the spending increases in healthcare. Technology spending trends are influenced by both substitution and expansion of technology. So what that means, I kind of thought about that, and what does that mean? And what that means is that you can buy a new piece of equipment that would replace an old piece of equipment, or you could buy a new piece of equipment that would be a brand new technology. Either way, whether it's a higher or lower cost piece of technology that you're purchasing, the use is shown to increase. So as usage increases, so do costs. In other words, if we buy the equipment, we're going to use it more. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So what we want to be able to do is make sure that communities know what they're getting and understand the trends in purchasing in their own community. So what we've settled on with the help of the Hospital Association for capital construction is a using a percentage of gross patient revenue because it respects the differences between large hospitals and small hospitals in the state. And so the five-year average gross patient revenue of type A hospitals, so these are the rural hospitals with less than 50 beds, is about $32 million, and for the large urban hospitals, it's about $387 million. This is the five-year average. A flat dollar rate, as we had initially proposed in this bill, seemed like it was put unfair burden on the smaller rural hospitals. So what we've decided to do, and what you'll see in your amendment, is a tiered reporting threshold of $5 million for the A and B hospitals. I'm sorry, 5% of gross patient revenues for the A and B hospitals and 1.75% of gross patient revenues for the DRG hospitals. It equates to about an $8 million project on the DRG hospitals on average. Would anything under that would fall under the reporting threshold. And we included in your packets a list of states that have certificate of need thresholds to see where that would fit in. We think it's very fair. What we've changed also in the bill, initially you saw a community reporting process that included a public meeting and a public notice. And we've worked with the Hospital Association to determine a way that they could post this information in a very obvious and public place on their websites and seek community input for these construction projects. But we also ask that they send the information to the Office of Health Policy and Research, because OHPR would then post a regional accounting of reported expenditures on its website, which would be give us the ability to track regional construction patterns in a more organized and comprehensive way and give transparency at the community level. So we also, as I mentioned before, want to be able to track the medical equipment expenditures, and this is large diagnostic kinds of equipment like MRI scanners or gamma knives. And so for an individual purchase of $1 million or over on one piece of equipment, we would ask that the reporting would be made also by hospitals and ASCs.
This was that in the bill.
That is in the amendment on dash one.
But where in the dash one?
Can you see? It's underneath where it says 5% gross patient revenue for A's, B's.
You need to say page
what
in the
line.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. We don't have the line numbers on the amendments because that wasn't what we have is section.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, section 7?
I have section 7, and I have here, I followed that, but then when you get to the $1 million, I don't.
That's in dash 2.
That's in the dash 2.
It's not in the dash 1, it's only in the dash
right.
2.
So are you talking about the dash 2s or the dash 1s?
My understanding of the dash one of twos was changing one.
Can we get them a copy of the dash ones?
It was in dash one.
Yeah. Chairman Anderson, for the record, again, Sean Coleman, Research Manager, Office of Health Policy and Research. My understanding of the two sets of amendments you have is the dash ones didn't include the medical technology, and that was a drafting error, and the dash twos include the medical technology. Yes. So the dash twos is probably what we're mostly addressing, and again, we haven't seen
the official version.
That's right,
because that's what I'm looking at,
yeah.
And I see on page two, lines 13 through 19, the purchase of or lease of, and there we have the $1 million. That's why I was confused, because I thought we were working from the dash one.
Yeah.
So we are working from the dash, you are working from the dash two.
This is the dash one.
Did the dash twos replace dash ones?
We haven't seen them.
It looks like it does, but I think that since we're not moving the bill,
those are the things we need to clarify.
Yeah.
But the dash two. Senator Sanderson, Senator Morissette, it would be my understanding then that the dash twos would be in full replacing dash ones. But since I haven't seen that, I'm hesitant to say for sure, and I apologize for that. But we didn't have them back.
Okay. But those are types of things that will need to be clarified for us.
Be happy to do that.
No, they're not
Thank
exactly
you.
Right.
Yeah, no, they're not.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, one other question.
Yes.
How recent are your figures about the $1 billion since 2003? Because PSEL
Chair
spent
Morris
half
Anderson,
of that, at least.
Senator Morissette, this was working off of Mr. Colmer's research?
From 2003 to 2007 is when that $1 billion was.
Okay. And Peace Health was not online yet. Peace Health in, at Riverbend in Springfield was a $500 million project. Oh.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So whether or not, I don't know if that's factored into this or not. It doesn't really matter. I was just kind of curious.
Chair Morris Anderson, Senator Morissette, I can look at that for you to see if it's inside the financials that we get
okay.
Part of our financial reporting in our office.
Okay.
But my guess is if it's a recent project, again, since we're working off 2007 financial numbers,
okay.
That it might not be in
okay.
there.
Okay. One other point. If Dr. Bates were here, he might say we have enough, quote, unquote, we have enough MRIs in Ashland to service all of Southern Oregon. So you're talking about that kind of equipment and then tracking it?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator said exactly. We're trying to find a more transparent way for communities to be able to see in advance and as purchases happen of large-scale medical technology in a community so that it's less anecdotal. We know that information for hospitals. We don't have that information for all kinds of other freestanding medical systems. We're trying to move in that direction with this bill and really try to understand trends in expenditures. We feel like it's a fair approach to reporting information and trying to involve some better community engagement.
Okay, one other quick thing. Last session in my committee, we had quite a discussion. One of our senator members, who's no longer with us, kept talking about the storefront MRIs that he went to. So there are a variety of shops around that provide that stuff.
Thank you. In addition, there are sections of the original bill which are deleted in the amendments, and if the amendments were adopted, would be deleted. After discussions with stakeholders, we believe that the concepts that were being addressed in Section 5 and Section 6 are being addressed in other bills. Specifically, Section 5 changes how DCPS receives information about and approves administrative expenses in its rate review and approval process. We opted to take this out of Senate Bill 454 because it's being addressed in House Bill 3145. The intent of Section 6 was to understand and evaluate payments for healthcare services made by licensed insurers and third-party administrators to providers. And with the all-payer, all-claims reporting program in Senate Bill 453 heard by the committee, we believe that that work would also be accomplished separately. So we opted to remove those two sections in the amendments from this bill. We feel that the bill in it of itself at this point is a good example of administrative simplification, a way to really help guide a statewide process of bringing both providers and payers into a system that would allow us to save money in a really easy fashion and also to be able to track our expenditures in capital construction and equipment better. We urge you to pass this bill. We also attached some supporting testimony from Osberg, who couldn't be here tonight.
Thank you very much. Now, I know that Senator Morris had concerns, but it looks like they deleted the section where you had your concerns.
They deleted both of them.
You deleted both of them. Okay, yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Who were the insurance executives you collaborated with on this?
Senator Mona Sanderson and Senator Cruz, I spoke to people, executives at ODS, at Regions, and at Pacific Source to get the information from them. I asked all of them if this would be a program that they would be comfortable with, and they all said that they thought it was a great idea.
I'd like to see a list of the people and their responses.
Senator Mona Sanderson, Senator Cruz, we'll see if we can get that for you. I also wanted to publicly state for the record that in the last time we discussed this bill, there was a letter of concern that had been sent by Kaiser Permanente about sections 4 and 5 of the bill. We've removed section 5 when we've adequately explained section 4, and Kaiser has contacted the committee chair and the committee administrator to expressed that their concerns have been adequately addressed.
Okay. Are there further questions at this point?
Just one more question about the twos, the ones and the twos. Are they both in play, or are we going with the twos? There's a lot of overlap, and there are some differences, and so I'm wondering.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Morissette, we would like to roll it up into one. I think that we need to see into the twos, and we just have to physically see them. And we apologize for not seeing them ahead of time.
That's fine. We're getting them, and then we're hearing. Oh, and I'm so glad that you're willing to be flexible in being here. And we've gotten these amendments just an hour or so ago.
I gotta make one more comment. The Health Fund Board was supposed to be such an open, inclusive, collaborative process, and one of their main bills, they have to do a gut and stuff to try to get people to support it. I question the process.
But that's why we wanted to have it come back to the legislature. That was the decision that we made, that we did not want the Oregon Health Fund Board to make decisions without having legislative input.
I understand, this bill is total overkill.
Okay, so with that, I think Tom Holt needs to come and respond. And have you seen the dash ones or dash twos? Actually, the dash twos.
Just now, Madam Chair. Yeah. And I've read through them.
It's a messy process.
This is a bad bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt, representing the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. We're here in support of the dash ones. As I read through the dash ones and dash twos, there is one difference. But before I get to that, I'd like to just touch on a little bit about how we got to the dash ones, and I'm speaking specifically about section 7. It's my understanding that we have a letter from, or some indication from Kaiser, who is a member of ours, deeply involved in sections 4 and 5, and that they are also in support of the dash 1 approach. We had some discussion with the Health Fund Board about arriving on a scalable way to report on capital projects. And we suggested a percentage approach precisely for the reasons that Ms. Robinson described, that at different hospitals, a dollar figure may be a large or small percentage of revenue. And so we came up with an approach that we think is fair, that captures the projects of significance at both larger hospitals and smaller hospitals, and have a different percentage for the A's and B's, 5% of gross patient revenue and 1.75% for the larger DRG hospitals. And then the ASCs have a $2 million threshold. We didn't really discuss the ASC threshold from our perspective. That's more their issue than ours. I would point out in the dash ones and in looking at the definitions that are in statute and how we define it here, the capital project would be inclusive of a large equipment purchase. Those are by nature capital expenditures. The other item that I would point out that we agreed to do in terms of how we measure the dollars is that if a project were paid for entirely out of charitable dollars, if the Gates Foundation decided to parachute in some money, we wouldn't necessarily be required to do a report on that specifically. But what we created here is a means to have some transparency with the public and to receive feedback from the public about projects of significance, where the hospitals would post information about the project and its public benefit on its website and then report that same information to OOPRS so that the Health Policy and Research Office can then aggregate that information in some way and do what it needs to do in terms of broader analysis. I think where we have significant disagreement would be in the dash twos. There is the addition of a specific dollar threshold for equipment. Our disagreement there is
and that is
I'm sorry
page
in the dash two.
Two
that's on page 2 lines 13 to 19, and as I read these two amendments, that's the difference between the two, that one includes that language and the other does not. We think a dollar threshold is something that's rather arbitrary, and we would be back here in a fairly short period of time messing around trying to figure out what the right dollar threshold would be then. Secondly, we think that singling out equipment in a hospital is sort of singling us out versus a number of other entities that are engaged in the purchase and marketing of services related to equipment. We had some discussion around, for example, freestanding diagnostic centers that are a growing presence in the market. They, too, contribute to the issues that were identified by the Health Fund Board. So our recommendation in terms of how to go forward with this would be to go with the dash one approach, and then let's have a larger discussion that includes discussion of the other entities and their equipment purchases, perhaps in the interim under your auspices as a committee, and we can look at a broader picture instead of picking out the hospitals and their equipment purchases. I would say that this is a very significant issue from our standpoint, and we would like to be able to resolve this bill amicably and move on with the broader issues of healthcare reform.
If there was, you don't want that piece in at all. If they included freestanding diagnostic centers, what would be your take on it?
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, I think we would welcome examination of those entities. The difficulty is that diagnostic centers are not licensed, they're not defined, and the other thing is, so there's a question of how there will be any nexus to have them to define who they are and who has to report and how you would hold them accountable to report. That, in our view, in light of our work on some other licensing issues of late, it just seems like too big a piece of work to try and bite off at this stage of the session. We would welcome that kind of discussion at a later time, but right now it's probably too late for us to get that work accomplished given the deadlines that we all face.
Thank you. I know that Inga Deckert had brought the same concern. Would you want to put on the record what Kaiser's take is on the $1 million threshold here?
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Inga Decker representing Kaiser Permanente. The first hearing of this bill Kaiser did submit a letter identifying several concerns with the bill, and for the most part, those concerns have been addressed. I believe
in the dash.
Kaiser would prefer the dash one amendments. And I believe that those are the amendments that were reviewed and approved. So those are the amendments that they would prefer over the dash twos.
Thank you. Further discussion? All right. Thank you very much.
You.
We have rescheduled this for
Tuesday
the 21st. So with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 454, and I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 456. And colleagues, we really need to pay attention. It's going to come down to whether we choose the dash ones and the dash twos on Senate Bill 454, but there may be even another set. I don't know. Okay. That'll be it there. So we're in 456 now. And colleagues, there are two amendments that we first want to address. And let me get my bill out here. It's regarding the name. And this committee tonight's going to discuss what name we're going to call our home. It's going to be either, as soon as I feel like I find the bill, here we go.
I vote for the Lori Mona Sanderson health home.
Okay, I believe they're the dash fours.
Yes, and Madam Chair, there is a dash two and a four. No, two.
I've got the fours, but they're in my office.
I've got one also.
Here, I have an extra.
What does that do?
I don't have
one.
Which ones do you need?
I don't think
I have the one.
Is this
okay, here's an extra four.
I don't know if they're rolled over. She can explain.
They were all
rolled over, and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Chairman Sanderson, can I clarify?
Please.
There are several amendments to 456. The dash threes roll together the one into the dash three, and is the result of the work group as far for a percentage of our work group activities. And then there was a group within the work group that wanted to have an alternative name, and the dash twos were a misstep in terms of it was off the original bill, but they really would prefer to have the dash fours. So the consideration ideally is between the dash threes and the dash fours.
Okay. Do people have the dash threes? Which ones do you need?
I need the threes. I have the fours.
Need threes. Let me see if I have an extra three.
I have the four unless.
We need threes and then we need a four. Let's make sure everyone has them. I have the threes and fours. Do we have a way of making a copy so that...
Yes, we do.
I was hoping I had an extra copy, but I do not. So what do you need, Senator Morris?
I need the dash fours.
Okay, so
may,
here's
please.
The dash four.
I need the threes.
And here, and he needs the dash threes, Senator Morris. So... let's go in recess. Do you want to put us into recess until we have Senator Cruz back and we get the copies? Okay. Committee on Healthcare and Veterans Affairs, and we are discussing Senate Bill 456, and we're going to discuss the threes and the fours. And so, take it away.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, Janine Smith, Administrator of the Office of Health Policy and Research. We've presented a couple of times on this bill, and you've heard testimony from others. You asked us to go back and have a work group, which we did. That included members of the Oregon Health Fund Board, members of the Oregon Academy of Family Practice, members of COHO, which is an association of some of the managed care, Medicaid managed care plans from Care Oregon, another managed Medicaid managed care plan, and we derive a work group amendment, which is 456-3. There was some feeling amidst the group to have an alternative name for the program, but in essence, the dash threes and the dash fours are the same bill except for the name of the program. So in both cases, they decide on some my office to set up an advisory committee that's appointed by the director of DHS to set some standards and quality expectations of the home. And it has sets up a direction to set up a learning collaborative to share amongst best practices, again, in both amendments. It talks about working towards payment reform and reimbursement to incentivize the home. And unfortunately, there are no adequate funding for this in the governor's recommended budget, so it's when funds are available. It also has some antitrust protection so that we can have the providers sit and together to talk about payment reform, and it aims to direct the state purchasers, PEB and OEB, to develop some uniform contracting standards to incentivize the integrated health home or the patient-centered primary care home. The committee all agreed that the essence of the home is to be patient-centered. The debate was, just to refresh your memories yet again, that the word integrated came from the health fund board's discussions in the delivery committee and the main board about integrating across services to the nursing home, to the hospital, to the clinic, and with the community, and also in terms of the behavioral health integration, of course, but not that we were expecting anyone to have an on-site behavioral health, or vice versa, if you were using a behavioral health clinic, that you'd have to have on-site primary care. It was trying to be as inclusive as possible. Certainly that the others speak for them, but they felt that primary care was their focus, and so they were opting for the name patient-centered primary care, which is what sort of the national movement is among the physician community. And in both cases, it was building on what's being done nationally, and it just is it's a terminology, and it's not setting what it is in this bill. It is just saying that this committee will be called something, and it will go ahead and work through some of these, how we actually get this accomplished.
Okay.
We don't have a fiscal bill.
No, we can't pass it, but the bill, but we want to get on record. Let's make a decision between the dash threes and the dash fours tonight.
And essentially, Chair Mona Sanderson and the committee, the fiscal is essentially the same as the original bill. The dash threes don't change that significantly unless there's a little tweak I'm unaware of. And the dash fours, the name doesn't obviously have any fiscal impact.
Sure.
Now, all right. It's between integrated health home or, first of all, do you agree with the policy of the dash threes and dash fours?
I can live with it.
That's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Now,
so we can't do the Mona Sanderson?
No way. So we will, now we need to decide whether we want patient-centered primary care home or integrated health care home.
Madam Chair, I think the patient-centered speaks more to the intent and purpose.
How about personally? Integrated patient-center? Hey, why not? I like integrated, excuse me, Madam Chair, because I think it tells more about what's going on, the integration. Primary care. I like the word integrated.
You like the okay.
If you can combine
Senator
the two,
Cruz
that would
likes
be.
Patient-centered. Dr. Bates sent his, he says he would like the dash fours. He likes patient-centered primary care home. And you like the four.
Madam Chair, I move the dash four amendment. You're just going to bill 456.
All righty. Senator Cruz moves the dash fours into Senate Bill 456. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Excuse.
Morrison?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. The dash fours are adopted. All right. That takes care of that.
Boy, that's a load off our minds. Here, I thought we were worried about fiscals.
All right. Colleagues, I know I want, I would like Tom Holt to explain the dash fives. We now have the dash fives.
Dash fives.
But let you give some history. You know how we have been talking about Senate Bill 2000, I mean House Bill 2009, and there's a process that's gone on over there, and we now have three different sets of amendments coming regarding 2009, different viewpoints of how to. The elements that are in 2009. So I thought that there maybe there would just be one and we could just attach it to 456, but now that we have three, we are going to put resurrect a bill 856, and we will be discussing this on Tuesday.
Is that the number I told you?
If we have all of the amendments.
Okay. I may have had the right number and misremembered between then and now, so it may be okay.
Because we truly, there's just too many people over here in the Senate that want to have that conversation. And so, but since Tom Holt's group started this idea, he has amendments ready, which is actually then going to be converted to an amendment to Gut and Stuff 856. So will you just go over this? And it's very important for people to have copies of this. So would you just go through it?
Yes.
Real quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Tom.
Oh,
Holt.
Do
we have copies of 856?
I don't.
I think they were in the packet of this morning.
Hold it.
Again, we need.
That's quite lengthy, too, isn't it?
It is. I thought everyone would have the dash fives. Do you have dash fives, Senator Morissette?
Not for 8-5.
Madam Chair, the dash fives are only two in reference to 4-5-6 at the moment. The 8-5-6 are in drafting.
Right.
I have 4-5-6 dash fives. I just got them.
Let.
456-5.
Did you? Oh, it's in the back of this?
No.
It's on the front.
No, I don't think you have them. Unless you had it this morning, and we don't have them.
I'm just wondering.
You need the whole thing?
Okay, we don't have them.
It would be helpful, because we're running out of time, and if we don't go over this.
Do you need copies?
Yes, we need. So let's go into recess just real quick. We're going into recess again. Sorry. Senate Committee on Health Care and Veterans Affairs, and we are discussing Senate Bill 456, the dash fives, which are not going to go anywhere in this bill, but it is the start of what we will be discussing and what might go in Senate Bill 856. So, proceed. Tom Holt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, member of the committee. I'm, for the record, again, Tom Holt with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. We were here a week or so ago discussing a concept that was developed by the association in cooperation with most of the domestic insurers in the state, as well as some of the business community. And what we have in the Dash 5s is the first iteration in legislative language of how we would implement our suggested alternative on health care reform. And I think what's been provided to you now is the guts of that. This has been evolving even since we got the Dash 5s back from LC, I think, in the last 24 hours. And I'm going to start at page 3 of the Dash 5. The first two pages of the Dash 5 were an attempt to do some of the work you just did with the integrated health homes, but we found that it was not practical to try and sync up with those efforts in terms of amendments. So we're happy to be moving this to a different bill. And so what I'll do here is just walk you through what these amendments would do. First, at the top of page 3, at line 2, is where I'm starting here. We would establish the health care authority within the Department of Human Services.
That should be attached.
It was the judgment of our coalition group that this is not a particularly opportune time to do yet another reorganization of DHS, and so rather than having the authority stand aside and start pulling functions out of DHS and other places to put it within DHS. So that's a first very important thing. So it establishes the authority within DHS for the purpose of, and I want to underscore this, implementing comprehensive health care reform in areas that are described in the amendment. And in number 3, it says that the health care authority, under the direction of the director of DHS, shall implement health care reform. And I underscore those two things, is that this is meant to be an action division of DHS. It is not yet another study of health care reform. And then we have a list of areas where the health care authority would have the authority to move forward. And they include provider reimbursement, evidence-based practice guidelines, healthcare data reporting, expanding the healthcare workforce, what's been known as the Pulse Registry, integrated health homes, that's now in 456.
That's the wrong word.
Or whatever the term, whatever the term is, the zebra, and so on. And these match up, in our view, very much with the areas that the Health Fund Board identified as areas to work. There are bills that have moved on many of these or are moving. It would be our intention to integrate the authority with the outcomes of those bills, and we'll be overseeing and implementing the work that is done there. And then the authority would need to, under number 4 on page 4, line 7, the amendment says that the authority shall develop a plan that provides for the immediate implementation of health care reforms in areas that are within the authority of the department and within the authority of other agencies, and do some coordinating functions amongst those. I want to underscore the words immediate implementation, that again, we're looking for action, not study. However, action with a plan, essentially a business plan, So it's a little bit more than go forth and do good works. It's come up with quickly develop a business plan, move forward on it, develop your accountabilities, and move on with the business of healthcare reform as it can be done. And then, and we'll get to this, but it references that the authority would act with the advice of a health authority executive board to develop the performance goals in each area of reform. And then we go on into Section 2, essentially creates technical advisory committees in all of the areas of healthcare reform that the authority is given scope to work on. And those technical committees would be developing the guts of those implementations and overseeing that. We would expect that those committees be mostly made up of experts in those areas to the extent possible.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Section 2 to a degree and Section 1 are duplicative. And I'm wondering, due to the fact that most of the areas covered in Section 1 are already covered in bills that have passed out of this committee, and Section 2 is the implementation committee of that body of work, do we have some potential redundancy here?
Chair Miles Anderson, Senator Cruz, we perhaps do. This, again, is our first go-round of attempting to put this into legislative language. We expect to have a further iteration of this as we take into account integrating with the bills that have moved out of this and other committees. So I think we're open to making those kinds of revisions as we take a second look at this.
Madam Chair, I would note that this was drafted before any of the 400 series had passed out of committee. So,
and then in Section 3, we generally provide direction to the Department of Consumer and Business Services to do analysis of the individual and small group market in insurance in the state. And we list out a series of criteria that need to be further evaluated and reported upon, and then with a report back to the legislature for the next session. And then the department may bring forth a plan to implement an insurance exchange if in the department's view that's appropriate. That's been a subject of a lot of discussion in this session. Our view is that we should not go create the exchange now and then study it. We think a business plan ought to be developed and then bring that plan here with all the pluses and minuses of doing that by the criteria that we've listed here, and we're open to including others, and then bringing an actual plan back here so that you would know what you were approving when it comes back here in 2011. Sections 5 through 8 deal with some issues of insurance rate review and reporting that are under discussion in other bills, and it's my understanding that those discussions are ongoing. We expect substantial revision to this piece before this could pass out, and so I would prefer to just skip over that. I think it's very much in evolution at this point.
Madam Chair, where are those bills? Are they on this side, on the House side?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Cruz, my understanding is that there is at least one House bill that folks are focusing on. And that's a little out of my particular expertise. We were prepared to have the experts here to talk about that on Tuesday.
I got my answer.
And then in...
Madam Chair.
Yes. Oh, Senator Morset.
I'm glad that B, on page 6, you put the exchange back in the last time you made this presentation. I didn't get the idea that you were that you wanted an exchange. You wanted to remove the exchange. And you also wanted to remove the publicly owned health plan with it. That's what I surmised.
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Morissette, I would say that the way these amendments frame that issue, they're agnostic as to creation of the exchange.
But at least they're mentioned.
But they, but that we would have a report back on whether or not it's appropriate to move forward with those things.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine.
Then, and then Section 9 reflags and reorganizes the Health Policy Commission as the Health Authority Executive Board, and that the members who are appointed by the governor would continue on through their current terms, and but we would expect that the other members would be replaced, and then the expectation, and there's some language further in on page 11, that the board would be comprised primarily of experts in various areas of healthcare, and we make some suggestions, including, but it could be others, but essentially the suggestion here in the amendment is that this executive board overseeing the activity of the health authority would be people who have technical expertise in things like the payment system, healthcare delivery, and so on. You know, so without getting into the laundry list approach of who needs to be there, pointing, giving some direction that, you know, might want to have a variety of talents. It might be actuaries, it might be physicians, it might be people who have experience in you know, health administration and so on. It might be technical experts on health records. You know, it could be any of those things. And then Section 10 is very important in our view. While the legislature can always do what it wishes when it comes to appropriations, we do create here a special purpose fund where monies that are raised for children's health insurance and for Medicaid would go into this fund along with any matching funds that go with that, and that's the purpose that they would need to be used for if this little piece were enacted. That would, at minimum, create a procedural bump in the road to taking money out of Medicaid to, say, build new bridges.
So it's sweep-proof?
Not sweep-proof, but sweep-resistant. the rest of this, essentially, and I don't think we bothered making copies given the time, but there are several pages more of purely conforming amendment language that deals with the renaming of the Health Policy Commission. We have done don't have it available yet for distribution. I'll have it for you on Tuesday. We have done a crosswalk with 2009. There certainly are some elements that are not in ours that are in 2009. It's a much more incremental approach, we would say. But we do believe it is moving forward. I want to emphasize that it's our view and our intention that this not be yet another study that sits on a shelf somewhere gathering dust, but that the things that are actionable that the new health authority division within DHS would be able to take action and would be the coordinating point where things move if other agencies need to be involved, but we avoid the cost and potentially serious disruption of delivery of services, including to those most in need of our help as a state, when doing yet another kind of reorganization of agencies in the midst of what's going to be a high degree of stress due to budget in the short term. You know, in the long term, would it make sense to move out into a separate agency? Well, that would be something for future legislatures to look at. We think this is a practical approach to move forward with now. We look forward to continuing the discussion on this concept and being back before you with more iterations of these amendments.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I do like the idea of not moving DHS out into another, or half of DHS, or 90% of it, because under 2009, there's some Medicaid left in DHS and some moved out, and that could be confusing. Actionable plan. One of the things that I'm not concerned about it, but I think that if we don't have keep our eyes on what the feds are doing, we're missing a boat. And they have to know what we're doing because we may be in line, be ready for them to start putting money into programs that are ready. So I think we have to be in communication with, I don't know, you know, Wyden, Merkley, or the agencies and so on, and just keep them informed about what we're doing and try to figure out what they're looking at in terms of funding programs, because that's, I think, the thing that the wild card is, we don't know what kind of money we're going to be getting. And the other thing is we can't act too fast because we might do the wrong thing. I mean, the unintended consequences of acting precipitously. So there are things about your plan that I like. I mean, and the one mostly is the fact that it's not taking DHS and, you know, splitting the agency, I think, is ridiculous.
Yeah. Chairman Sanderson, Senator Morissette, we completely agree that we need to be, you know, flexible in terms of being ready to, you know, get a hold of federal funds when and if they become available. I think to some degree we're all still sorting through the recent stimulus packages to see what little presence might be there. And that's one reason we've tried to, you know, while giving some very specific direction on areas to move forward, we think we're leaving a fair amount of flexibility for DHS through a new health authority with division within it to, you know, move forward as opportunities arise and on which consensus can be built.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Holt and colleagues. I'd like to close the public hearing on work session on 456. And we have these bills scheduled for Tuesday. Since there's now three groups working on amendments to 856, we're still, is that scheduled for Tuesday?
Yes, it is.
Yes, we schedule it, but I want us to be flexible because a lot now is depending on what LC can get out to us. So we have scheduled an evening meeting for a week from tonight again.
Yay!
Just in case we can't get through all of the bills. So I just wanted to prepare you for that.
I like nighttime in the Capitol, don't you?
It's just... So with that, thank you, colleagues, and we're adjourned.